Hi everybody, my name is Kelly Rigney and the title of my presentation today is Destination Health Education, an Interdisciplinary Path to Low Literacy, Culturally Sensitive Materials. It's a mouthful. And what I wanted to talk about is how the Children's Health Fund, where I work, develops health education materials for an extremely diverse audience. Again, my name is Kelly Rigney and I have no relationships to disclose. I wanted to start by telling you a little bit about the Children's Health Fund because it will help to demonstrate why it is so important that we develop materials that are relevant to such a varied audience. The Children's Health Fund is committed to providing health care to the nation's most medically underserved children and their families through the development of and support of innovative primary care medical programs, response to public health crises, and the promotion of guaranteed access to appropriate health care for all children. We do this through partnerships with academic medical centers, federally qualified health centers, and children's hospitals. These partnerships are projects that provide primary care to underserved children on mobile medical units. And I don't know if anyone has ever seen a mobile medical unit, but that's a photo of one right there. And they are basically doctor's offices on wheels. There's exam rooms, there's a triage room. Many of our projects use electronic health record that's on there. And it's all just sort of squished into a really small space. And these work well for us because we go to a lot of really rural areas and urban areas that don't have a lot of community health centers or hospitals. So we're able to get into places and get out and move around. This is a map of our network. Right now we have 22 sites and we're growing all the time. As you can see, the projects are very geographically diverse. And they focus on a wide variety of populations with different barriers to healthcare. For example, we have a project in New York City that focuses mainly on children that are in domestic violence and homeless shelters. And so their issues to accessing healthcare are things like trauma, unstable living situations, moving frequently. And that's very different from the project that we have in Cochise County, Arizona, which is on the Mexican border, and the kids there are dealing with immigration issues and have to pass through three checkpoints in order to get to the nearest children's hospital, which is also different from the project that we have in rural West Virginia, where the barrier there is even if you have medical insurance or Medicaid or SCHIP, that the nearest medical provider may be 50 miles away, so that you need to take the day off of school and work to get to a medical appointment. So despite all these differences, in many ways, kids are kids and they have similar healthcare issues, but the way they hear a health education message is affected by many things that happens in their daily lives. So our challenge is to develop health education materials that are relevant and effective for all of our projects. So given the diversity of our projects, if we can do that, we figure it can be relevant and effective for pretty much anyone in this country. So what I wanted to mainly talk about was not necessarily the materials, but the process that we go through to develop those materials. So here's a quick overview, and then we'll go through each step in more detail. The first thing we do is we learn from our clinicians. We have wonderful clinicians. They provide excellent health care. So we ask them what they're talking about with their patients, what subjects they have good health education materials for, and what subjects they're lacking. And then we look at the literature and find out what the literature says about the subjects that our providers are interested in. And then we look for funding. And we're lucky we have a long-standing relationship with MetLife, and so they've generously funded most of our health education materials. So once we've done all that, we work on content design, which is the biggest part of the process. And then the review process, content review process, and then design with a graphic designer, and then focus groups and more review, and then our final product. So we ask our clinicians what they feel they need better health education materials for. And like I said, we have a very diverse group of providers. We have pediatricians, family practice physicians, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, registered nurses, social workers, dietitians, psychologists, health educators, dentists, and all of them are very happy to give us feedback on what they need. So then we have to look at, take all the information they give us, and some of them are really issues that are most relevant to a specific geographic area. So we find issues that are salient for everybody. So what is relevant to a boy living in Lee County, Arkansas, but also relevant to a girl living in Miami, Florida? So this is just an example of what the literature tells us. And we've been putting a lot of our recent efforts into nutrition and fitness, primarily because it affects so many children, and the issues aren't getting better, so there has to be a better way that we can deliver this message, right? So this is just some examples. The literature tells us that the rate of overweight among children aged 6 to 17 rose 18% nationwide. The rate of obesity for homeless children in New York City is 32%, and that adolescence is a period when negative body image affects self-esteem. So our latest line of health education materials is called Think Healthy. And Think Healthy highlights nutrition and fitness by emphasizing a mind-body approach to healthy lifestyle. Think Healthy addresses the underlying psychological conditions associated with obesity, depression, anxiety, obsessive-compulsive behavior, and poor body image and low self-esteem. And we always develop companion brochures for children and their caregivers. So this particular line of health education materials is for middle school-age children and their caregivers. And it focuses on the cyclical nature of mental health and well-being and education and fitness. So the content development. We get a team of providers from all of our network. The current team that I have right now has a provider from Memphis, from South Florida, from Dallas, from LA, from Orlando, and then me in New York City. And we try and get it's hard for them to squeeze out time out of their really busy clinical schedules, so we try as best we can to get as diverse a group of providers together as possible, from rural areas, from urban areas, from the middle of the country. You can see in our map we've got sort of a hole in the middle of the country, so that area isn't quite as well represented. So we get together, because everyone's all over the place, we get together via conference call, and we do conference calls about every 3 weeks, and we divide the assignments up between everybody and email back and forth. And we actually just got webinar technology, so we're going to start using that too. So by the end of about 4 months, getting together every 3 weeks over the phone, we have a pretty good draft that we can start reviewing. And our content is evaluated for accuracy, literacy, cultural appropriateness, and relevance to our geographically diverse audience. And in the grant that we write in for an exercise physiologist to look at the material, for a cultural anthropologist to look at the material, and a low literacy specialist. And we're lucky that we have a funder who's willing to fund that, but if you don't have that, local universities, faculty can look at your stuff for you. They're usually really happy to do that. And then translation. And I think some of the other people on the panel are going to talk more in depth about translation, so I'll just be really brief about what we do. Everything that we have is translated into English and Spanish, and those are the only two languages at this point that we have the capacity to do. But the initial translation is done by a native speaker from South America, and then we have it back translated and translated again, and then a review is done by native speakers from Central America, Mexico, and the Caribbean, just to make sure, because our and we have a project in Miami, so many of those people are Caribbean Spanish speaking, and our project in Arizona, many of those people are Mexican Spanish speaking, so to make sure that the Spanish that we use works for everybody. And then next is a design process. And my best advice would be to write into your grant to hire a designer, and then give them a lot of really good guidance and feedback. Make sure that the photos that you use are diverse, and I know that sounds really obvious, but I put this picture up there in particular because a lot of the kids that we provide services to are not in a traditional family setting. They're taken care of by their grandparent or by another family member. So things like reminding the designer to put pictures that reflect that into the materials. So some of the things that aren't the obvious diversity are important. And then when you're designing for a low literacy audience, it's not just the words that you use, but things like the font type and the flashy designs that you have around the words. So our designer always wants to use fonts that have like shadowing and shading, and we have to sort of rein them in from things like that. So things that you might not necessarily think of, and that a designer certainly doesn't think of, because sometimes what looks best is not what's going to be most effective for a low literacy audience. So going back and forth with them on that. But our designer is great and sort of used to us, but we still have to keep reminding her of these things pretty much every year. And then we focus group. And we focus group with both groups of parents and children, and we ask them what they think of the content, if they understand the content. So we ask questions that would demonstrate understanding after they've looked at it, and if they relate to the pictures. And particularly the kids are not shy at all about telling us what they think of the materials that we developed. So we usually get a lot of really great information from them. And then we incorporate those suggestions and go through one final round of review with pretty much everyone that's been involved in the project at all, so the content designers, and then they take it back to their teams that they work with, the cultural anthropologist again, the exercise physiologist again, who often has feedback about things like pictures of a kid stretching, they're not stretching the right way, that sort of thing. And then we have to send it to the funder to give a once-over. And our funder usually just rubber stamps it. They haven't ever given it. The only thing they ever give us problems with is how their logo looks on the back or something like that. But they have been really good about trusting us to develop the content that we are experts in. And this is just a picture of the cover of one of our latest brochures. And we distribute it to everyone in our network, and we send samples to a lot of different, the National Association of Community Health Centers. We send it to National Association of School-Based Health Centers, try and get it out there as widely as possible. And the MetLife is the founding funder, like I said, and all of the materials are available free of charge on our website and can be reproduced in their entirety.
Thank you, Kelly. So now we will hear from Steve. Just to let everybody know, we're here about developing culturally appropriate materials for those of you who are strolling in. I ask that you all have your cell phone on silence, make sure, so our presenters aren't disturbed. Steve.